Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hey, Hungry Authors, welcome back. This week, we have Meg Geiswhite with us, and I am personally just excited to share her story with you and have her tell you more about her incredible book, because I had the honor of working with her on it a little bit and, you know, just kind of seeing her go through all of the various stages and phases of authorhood and really seeing her life completely transform. So I'm not going to give away too much of what is going on, but she is the author of Intoxicating Lies, One Woman's Journey to Freedom from Gray Area Drinking. And we're going to get into what that means and what that, you know, what her book is about. So, Meg, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much, Ariel. I'm so happy to be here with you and Liz. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do and then what your book is about?
So I'm actually in pharmaceutical sales in autoimmune and rare disease, and I've been in the industry for about 25 years. And I really fell into the work hard, play hard sales culture, which entailed a lot of drinking. And then I fell into the mommy wine culture once I was married with kids, and I bought the t-shirts and the tea towels that said behind every great mom is a bottle of wine. And it normalized really that behavior of saying, you know, it's okay to have a couple glasses of wine after a hard day with the kids. And then I had three back-to-back life incidents that happened, and it really changed the usage of my drinking from that recreational weekend use to a nightly medicinal use. And so I fell into this term that's actually in the medical literature, and I wasn't aware of it at the time, obviously, but it's called gray area drinking. And once I realized that I was on the alcohol use disorder spectrum, of course, being in pharmaceutical sales and loving the science, I dove right into the research of what alcohol truly is and what it's doing to our mind, body, and spirit. And we're not warned about it on bottles. We don't really talk about it unless we think we may have a problem with it. The confusing part for gray area drinkers, and we can get into what gray area drinking is here in a second, is that we look a lot like what is called a quote unquote normal drinker. And so there's a lot of confusion in this space. In fact, my own therapist told me when I finally worked up the courage to tell her that I thought I had a drinking problem, she told me that I was thinking about it too much. And so for anyone who's listening, and maybe you are or aren't, if you aren't questioning your drinking, you're probably okay. It's really for those of us who suffer silently and internally with really no external consequences. No one's telling you that you need help. And so, in fact, I was winning awards at work. On the outside, I looked like I had it all. But on the inside, my inner knowing, which I talk a lot about in the book as well, was pleading with me to explore my relationship with alcohol. And I'm so glad that I didn't listen to all the external opinions out there that were saying, you're fine, you drink just like me, you don't have a problem. And so once I discovered this gray area drinking term, I realized that that basically it is, I'll give you an analogy of what it is. So on one end of the spectrum, you have what you would call take it or leave it drinkers. And those are people who, like my in-laws, they might split a beer on a birthday, have a toast of champagne at a wedding. They literally pour the 3 ounces at Christmas. I mean, they could take it or leave it, right? You've seen friends that are like, I'll just have one. Those are take it or leave it drinkers, right? And then on the far end of the spectrum, you have 10% of the population who is physically dependent on alcohol and would have to have a medical detox, true alcoholism. Everything in between those two spaces is gray area drinking. So it's a vast, wide category. But the thing was that the pandemic really exacerbated this for women in particular, because we were at home juggling online work while juggling online schooling of the kids and trying to take care of the house. And it was a lot. And so what were we told? And the message was have a quarantini. So, it's no fault of anyone's. We're ingrained with these messages at a very young age in movies, TV, even some of our own family, behaviors. And I take the reader really through that from an early age of my very first impressions with alcohol with my family and how that over time grew into gray area drinking. So the book, Ariel and I worked together, and it was this beautiful way of taking the five most intoxicating lies that I had fallen prey to and believed about alcohol, and then giving at the end of each chapter a truth and a did you know? Because I didn't want the book to be preachy. There was at one point I was going to have a whole chapter just on like the science and kind of like, did you know this? Oh my gosh, and it felt very much of like in your face, and I didn't want that. I wanted really anybody who was sober curious, whether they just wanted to cut back or quit altogether, to feel like they could go on the ride with me through the book and not feel like I was pointing a finger at them. There's enough shame and judgment that we put on ourselves in this journey as it is. And so I didn't want to add another finger point there. And so it was a beautiful way of like starting with the lie at the beginning of the chapter and giving the truth at the end and a little nugget of, did you know?
Yes, and I think you did that in a really beautiful way. I mean, it really follows your story too, and I think that's a way that makes it more accessible to women who may be going through the same thing or maybe having the same doubts. So, and that was, a piece of the tension that you and I really explored when we were working together was how do we balance the, your story with the needs of the reader? So, could you talk more about like how did you think about, framing this as something that will be really helpful and instructive for the reader with your own story? Because there were some things that you were like, I need to talk about this thing in my life that happened.
Yeah, I think that the story, we learn through stories, right? And so sharing each chapter a different story and taking the reader through a different story with each lie. So the lie is really parallels to a story in my life. And there were even some things, like not everybody's going to resonate with my story. So I brought in the women who were in my sober group. Their stories as well, because my husband ended up quitting drinking with me. The majority of women in my group, their husbands did not quit drinking. And that's a big, tough challenge when somebody in the house continues to drink. And I didn't want the reader to feel left out from that perspective because of my story was different than the majority. So I brought the other women in and got their permission and told their stories as well throughout the book. I think that was where you were going with us. Is that kind of where you were talking about Ariel, how we work together?
Yeah, definitely. And just, there we often work with authors who want to both tell their story, like approach it from a memoir perspective, and kind of show the reader how to accomplish something in their lives. And I know finding the balance between those two things is hard because those goals are inherently different.
Yeah.
And it is very tricky to find a path towards a book that feels very authentic to both the reader and the author's journey. And your book is one of those ones that I often send to authors as an example of like, hey, here's someone who managed to find that balance and did it very well.
Oh, thank you. Thank
So.
you. Well, I couldn't have done it without you. And I've had so many women say that the book gave them the permission slip to heal because the book is not only just about alcohol, it's also about how it crushed my inner knowing, that connection to my inner knowing and my self-worth. And so that was as equally as important to kind of take that thread throughout the book of how and when in my life, that was crushed, and the stories I was telling myself, and how I was using alcohol to kind of really numb from those traumas that had happened in my life. And I've had women ask me like, "How did you write about all this?" And I went to every single person that I mentioned in the book, and I got permission, and I told them what I was thinking about writing. And I did have some people, I had somebody in my family say, like, I think you should take this entire chapter out about your daughter vaping. I think it's going to hurt her from a sports perspective and da 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 da, a lot of opinions. And I said, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. But I knew that moms needed to hear a really raw, vulnerable story that happens all the time at home with the children, where they're going to be faced with making choices of about addictive substances, whether it's vaping or drinking, and how do we handle that, and what does that look like? And even though I won't give away the whole story, but even though it wasn't perfect in my story, nothing is, especially with raising kids, right? And so it really kind of showed the beauty in the mess, and that we get to have these opportunities with our children to show up for them in a way that says, look, I'm not perfect. I made a bad choice, but I learned from it, and here's how we move forward. And it was really a pivotal growth moment for my daughter and I. And so I think that in the alcohol-free journey, there's a lot of times sidesteps, and there's a lot of shame and judgment that we place upon ourselves. And I really wanted the reader to feel like this is okay. Like this is part of the growth. This is part of the evolution, and it will finally click.
Yeah,
So, yeah.
totally. Yeah, and I love this idea that you have that, is a real selling point of the book, I think, that you didn't have a rock bottom, which I think is so relatable. Like, so I've read, a handful of alcohol or sober memoirs. Like, I like Laura McCown a lot, We Are the Luckiest and Push Off from Here. I've been reading her stuff a decent amount lately because she was on Glennon Doyle's podcast recently. But anyway, and she's got that, she opens with this really intense story about her getting super drunk and like not knowing what, waking up in the morning and not knowing where her very young daughter was, and that it was this wake-up call for her. And fortunately everything worked out fine, but there's a really good chance that it might not have. And anyway, and it's compelling, but it's like, I gotta imagine for most women who wonder if they have a problem with alcohol, they don't actually have a moment like that. They don't almost abandon their 3-year-old at a hotel. You know
And
what I mean?
that is why I didn't wait to traditionally publish. I know that question was going to come up, because
Okay, yeah, tell us.
I could not find any books that were all the quit lit books I was reading, because I was reading them all. Same thing. I was like, well, that's not me. I'm not that bad. And I know we're not supposed to do the comparison thing, but let's just face it, we do it. We do it as a society. And so I thought, well, but everybody's telling me I don't have a problem too. So maybe this is like putting me back in that okay box to keep drinking. And so when women come to me and they say, I loved your book, I could so relate to it, I want to write a book, but I feel like the books are now all coming out, I'm like, no, we need all the stories we can get, because not everybody's going to relate to my story. And in gray area drinking, it comes in many shades, whether you're a light shade or a dark shade, it doesn't matter. But we need all those different stories to say, oh, that's me. And I too can have this incredible alcohol-free life, and I don't have, I have felt this internal struggle. And so I felt the same way when I read Laura's books. I love Laura's writing, but I felt the exact same way. And that's why I was like, I have to get this message out, because I couldn't find any books on gray area drinking.
Hey friends, it's that time again. If you've been wanting to learn about our bespoke book mapping process that has helped hundreds of authors plan and write the book of their dreams, we have good news. Registration is now open for our next Map Your Book cohort, which runs May 7th through June 4th. In 5 90-minute sessions and weekly Q&A meetings, we'll help you figure out your book's transformation and teach you how to map out your entire book, chapter by chapter. Book mapping is the invisible matrix that makes books work. We're going to teach you how to see it and how to do it for your own book. Head to mapyourbook.com to learn more and sign up for our May cohort.
Here's something that I've been thinking about lately in my own life. I have a 4-year-old son and a 2-year-old daughter, and I do like red wine. I don't, I would not consider myself, I don't, certainly don't have it. I don't have it during the week. I sometimes have it on the weekend. But the other day, last weekend, I was standing there with my son in the evening. He was like using the restroom, and I'm just sort of standing there, and I had a glass of wine in my hand. And he said, "What is that?" And I said, "Oh, it's wine. It's for grown-ups. Only grown-ups drink wine." And he was like, "Yeah, mommy likes wine." And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "Mommy likes wine." And I was like, "Well, that's not really an image I want you to have." You know, it was just sort of this wake-up call for me that, like, I don't think I have it all that often, but I really don't want, I just did it. I just, here's all I know is my body went like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when he's—
Well, they're watching us, right? They're watching us. And so if you're having it on occasion, right? I don't, again, I don't want to throw shade or shame at anyone.
Sure, yeah.
But if it's the thing that your child sees when you come home and you're like, "Oh, I had the hardest day. I need my wine. Just wait a second. Okay. I can't deal with you till I have my wine." Right. Like that is a real thing for a lot of women. It's like, "I gotta have my wine. I've had a day. I deserve it." That's my very first lie in the book. And it is the one that women say the most. "I deserve this." And society's told us we deserve it. Right. And so we don't have a place to go as moms to say, "This is really hard. And I need rest and I need help and I need support and I need all the things." But the easy Staples checkout button of the wine is highly accessible right there. Society says, go do it. And so I think we have to ask ourselves as moms, when life gets hard, or even when life is really good and we're celebrating, do we want our kids to believe that they need to have this substance in order to celebrate? Or when life is tough, do they see their mom pad themselves at every turn? And these are questions we have to ask ourselves because our kids are watching us. And here I was telling my daughter not to vape. And here I was drinking an addictive substance, right? What's the difference? What's the difference?
So tell us more about the decision not to traditionally publish and instead to self-publish. Were there, so it sounds like there were things kind of pushing you away from traditional publishing, but were there also things maybe pulling you towards self-publishing? Can you talk more about that decision-making process?
I didn't even know. I remember saying to Ariel, "Should I hire a ghostwriter? Like, I just really, really feel this message has to get out to women and I can't find it anywhere." And they say, right, that you write the book that you can't find. So, so I just had this pressing, like, invitation from the universe. This message needs to get out now. And so that was one thing. The second thing was I did not have a following. I didn't have a platform. I didn't have a business around it. And so, I mean, until Ariel said to me, "Meg, you're a writer," I wasn't even sure how I was going to birth this thing into the world. I found this wonderful hybrid publisher that got me, in my opinion, as close to traditional publishing as I possibly could. Like, my book is offset printed, just like traditionally published books. They have an Ingram sales force, just like traditionally published books. But there are many pros and cons to both. And so I got to design my cover, right? And I got to choose some of the things that you don't get to in traditional, but I also had to pay for an audiobook, you know, where that traditional has that set up for you. So there's many pros and cons, but I just think that the invitation itself to get this message out to women who I felt like were really this gray area drinking category after the pandemic was like exploding. Drinking went up 41% in women just from the pandemic. And I thought, I just can't wait. And if someone doesn't buy this, you know, it just felt like an urgent need out there. And that was probably the driving force behind it. But it's been great having a hybrid publisher versus just completely self-publishing, because I was also very overwhelmed, never doing this before. How do I upload it to Amazon? What if I have a problem? How do I, and I have to tell you, my publisher has been with me every step of the way to this date. I mean, I had an issue with my audiobook and they fixed it and they got it uploaded to ACX like that day. So I there are many occasions where I've had questions or didn't understand something and they've come in and answered or given direction and guidance that I am eternally grateful for.
Well, let me ask you about this then. So I noticed on Amazon your book has 150 reviews, which is a lot for any book. It's really a lot for a hybrid or self-published book because, you don't have sort of the engine of a traditional publisher behind you. So two-part question. How did you do that? And anyway, second part, basically, just like how did you promote your book? Not that I think it's a misconception that traditional publishers do a lot to promote your book anyway. Most of the time, that substantially falls on the shoulders of the author anyway. So sometimes there's not a huge difference behind, the marketing, like energy that you'll have behind you. You'll have to do most of the work no matter what. But tell us a little bit about what it was like launching your book out into the world, and how did you manage to get 150 ratings? That hasn't even been out that long. Tell us about it.
Thank you. So it was a lot of hard work, not gonna lie. And it was getting on podcasts primarily. And there are a lot within the sober community. So that was super helpful. It was every time I got somebody who sent me a DM an Instagram or left a comment, "I loved your book," or "Your book changed my life," I would private message or message them back, "Would you mind leaving a review? I don't care if you copy and paste what you just said." So I was like, it can just be 5 stars. Just please review it. In my newsletter, every newsletter, I ask for reviews. If when I go into book clubs and sober communities and speak, I almost always forget at the end, but I always ask, if this book spoke to you in any way, will you please leave a one word, one sentence, comment of review. And so I had a lot of podcasters and sober influencers that I had mailed the book to as well. So I had my own inventory to mail to. And so I asked anybody that I sent my book to, or that I personally sold from my own inventory, I actually slipped a little piece of paper into the book that said, "Thank you so much for, letting my dreams of becoming an author become a reality. Would you take 2 minutes to leave a review? It would mean so much to me because it helps me reach more women that are stuck in this space." And everybody wants to help everybody, right? Especially when you're going through something like this. And then if it wasn't bought on Amazon, the second part of that I would say is, if you did not purchase this on Amazon, would you please go to Goodreads and leave the review there? Because I actually got blocked from Amazon initially. So I had so many people come in to do reviews, and because I had given them my book or I had sold them my own inventory, I know that's a little different than traditional, they couldn't leave a review and they blocked me for a little while. So you do have to really,
Interesting.
you have to direct them to Goodreads because they'll allow for any
Yeah.
reviews.
Now tell us why you did that. Like, why were reviews? I mean, obviously you want people to buy it, but second to buying it, why were reviews so important to you and just sort of what you were trying to accomplish here?
They weren't, I have to say I was blown away by the reviews. I honestly didn't know how it was going to be accepted or viewed into the world. And I knew that the algorithm in Amazon likes those reviews, and when you get to a certain number, your book is actually promoted. It sold out the second day on Amazon. So I underestimated what I thought it would do. And so, it's been on its third round of printing already. And so I've been blown away by the response. And so I just remind myself that every review helps me reach another woman that felt like I did in 2019, where I felt alone, sick, tired, lost, confused, struggling internally. And I don't want anybody else to have to feel that way. And so if somebody reads a review and it just says exactly how they feel, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I have to read this book," then it's not really about the sale for me. It's really about reaching that huge category. I feel like we've only even scratched the surface.
Yeah, I love that so much that, you've you've got this heart for other women who are in your shoes. And I think that comes through so loud and clear in not just, you know, the book itself, but in the way that you talk about it, in the social media posts that you share, in the community that you've developed. So I'd love to hear more about that side of things. Like, I remember we had a conversation early on where I was like, do you plan on doing any like coaching around this or, you know, helping other women who are in your shoes? And you were like, absolutely not. I'm not going to do that. I have no interest. I'm just, I don't even know if I can be an author. And you were like, no. I never want to speak about this, et cetera.
Yeah, I really went into this very naively, like, oh, can I just write a book about my story and it be, you know, that enough? And I hear your voice all the time. What is the business that you're going to have around this book? And I had no idea why you were asking me that. Now I clearly know why you were asking me that. But at the time, I was like, I just want to share my story. And now, okay, so you really have that first 6 months that you have to ride that launch and put, you know, the pedal to the metal as far as marketing and promotions. And it was, I think I started with 10 followers and I'm up to like 5,000 now. So it was learning Instagram and really speaking to my core audience of what spoke to them and what, you know, what their feelings were around their journey as well. And so it was part was social media. I was doing like some Instagram lives. I actually had a fear of public speaking and before my book launch. I don't know if you knew that too, but I had to work with a coach. I got stuck in my right before it was launching, I got stuck in the marketing. Like I couldn't kind of figure out Instagram because I was just doing kind of post nothing showing my face. And she called me out on it. She said, why are you hiding behind the camera? And I said, well, I actually have a fear of public speaking. She's like, oh, we've got to fix that before you launch this book, because there's no way you're going to be able to do the reels and the podcasts and the, so, you know, the book clubs and all the things. So she worked with me on that. We totally resolved that, which was amazing. And then she gave me some really great advice. She said, I want you to go through your book and pick out a minimum of 50 quotes, if not up to 100. Okay. That you are going to post. Like, I want your look, like your branding, and you're going to do your quotes. And those got shared so many times. And then I just got more and more comfortable. I just slowly kept doing some reels and getting comfortable and more comfortable around the camera. I remember the very first podcast I did, I had to hold like someone gave me a crystal that's for communication. And I remember like gripping it for dear life. But then everything I did scared. And I just took the next right step, the next right step, the next baby step. And the next thing I know, I've done like 50 podcasts. I've done all these, you know, I just spoke to 115 women down in Florida. And there so now let me answer the second part of your question, which is the business. I realized that I needed to have something to kind of keep the book alive, right? Keep it going. And the extension of that book that following these breadcrumbs turned into was a writing community. And this writing community was, again, something I wanted in my journey that I could not find. So I wanted a place where women, after alcohol was out of the picture, it's basically the earth school. Where could we slow down, get back into our bodies, regulate our nervous system, and explore writing through creative journal prompts and discussion? And so each month I bring in a topic. One month was about intuition. One was, how do you become the creator of your life? Another one was on joy, manifesting. And so I come in and I do some slides, a couple slides, and then I create these journal prompts. You don't have to be a writer. It's not a writing course. But what I can tell you is happening with these women is like their lights are coming on. They're reconnecting with their inner knowing. It's making me, especially when I spoke to those 115 women, realize that women are looking for a place to slow down and fill their cup up and reconnect with that creativity and that writing. And it's just been the most soul fulfilling and giving thing I have done in this book journey. I mean, the book itself was one journey and cathartic and in its own way. And now this writing community is taking off in a way that I haven't even advertised it. And I already have almost 20 women waiting for the next cohort to open. So, and it's getting ready to be published in a sober magazine. And I'm like, I don't even know what's going to happen then. So it's taking off. Like, what I guess my point is that I just kept following the breadcrumbs. I kept listening to what I would have wanted and what was missing for me. And was I scared doing it? Every step of the way I was. But it just kept unfolding into this most incredible journey.
Yeah, that's amazing. We often in our Map Your Book cohorts, we one of the early steps is defining your audience. And there's a lot of ways to do that. You can read about it in the forthcoming book, Hungry Authors Coming to Near You, August 2024. But anyway, or join one of our cohorts where we talk about that. But anyway, so there's a lot of ways to define that. You can do age, demographics, psychographics. They struggle with this, they struggle with that. All of that's really helpful. But when someone is really struggling and they don't quite know how to define their audience, and they're writing, especially if they're writing about something quite personal, almost always their audience ends up being the you of like 5 years ago, 3 years ago. Like, I just so often I find myself telling people, I guarantee you're just writing to you, the what you needed 5 years ago, you know, or whenever.
It's so true. It's so true.
And
It
like, I
really
think we
is.
overcomplicate some parts of writing, and some of it is like, you know, write the book that you wished existed, you know, write to the person that you were, you know. Sometimes it can be as simple as that, you know, like, problems are much more universal than I think we give them credit for. You know, we think we're so unique, but like, really, we like, you know, whatever. There's 8 billion people on the planet. Like, lots of people share your struggles, you know?
It's so true. And you realize that there's such like a need out there. You think you're alone in it, and actually there's so many people that feel just like you do. And when you open up that vulnerability and you share your story and you share your experience and just, I even just with the writing community, I had no idea that there were so many women that were looking for a space like this where, we open up with a grounding meditation and just this whole thought of getting back into our bodies. And I knew because I talk about the intoxicating lies of our society, how women were programmed to nurture and take care of other people, and we become dutiful yet dead inside, and we're told we're too thin, we're too fat, we're too tall, we're too short, we're too aggressive, we're too shy, like all the things, right? And it gets very confusing, and we disconnect from ourselves, and we really need a place where we can reconnect with ourselves. Like, they're just, we aren't taught how to regulate our nervous system. We aren't taught this earth's cool stuff. And so it's no one's fault, but it's an incredible need out there. And it's, it's not this, it's not therapy. It's just this really safe community. And I think when you have a business around the book and it supports it in that way, it forever is like a life-giving source to it that keeps growing it, because I really felt like the book, after it was like a year, it was a really good year, but then it's kind of like, now what? And how do you keep that going?
You know, what I was thinking about as you were telling that story, and then earlier in the call too, is about how people sort of drift into gray area drinking. You know, like, in I've heard somebody, oh, I'm gonna totally butcher this, but somebody, maybe like a Donald Miller type, or like a Michael Hyatt type, somebody like that, talks about like the drift, like where it's basically in life where you just sort of subconsciously kind of like end up somewhere, and all of a sudden you're like, how did I get here? You know? And I feel like gray area drinking happens like that a lot for so many of us,
Yes, it's slow
especially,
and insidious.
yes, exactly, especially when you're in, you know, like young motherhood or, you know, whatever, balancing lots of stuff. And so, yeah, you just sort of like end up there. And then when you start to have this, have a consciousness about it, you realize that the reason why you feel like you need that drink at the end of the day, you deserve it, especially during COVID when it felt like it sort of took the edge off, is that we need something to take the edge off. Like, yeah. It reminds me of this, what, right after having my daughter, I had, you know, a little bit of PPD and got put on an SSRI, which I think is great. I think medication is wonderful. Pro that if you, you know, feel like you need that. But I didn't tell anybody for a while. And then I was at this, I was like hanging out with a bunch of my pals and I felt like, okay, I'm going to tell them, you know, I'm on Zoloft or whatever. And it felt like this big confession I was making. Mm-hmm. And like, literally I was like, guys, you know, here it is. And every single one of them was like, oh yeah, me too. And it was like, all of us were like, yeah, me too. And so I'm not really trying to make a point about like anxiety medication. My point is that like all of us felt like we needed something to turn the volume down.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, here's my question then. If you're not drinking, what are you doing to turn the volume down?
So it's interesting because when you have a drink, you get the 20 minute kind of that sense of like, oh, took the edge off, right? But then you're chasing it for the rest of the night. In 20 minutes, if you have 20 minutes to have a glass of wine, you have 20 minutes to go meditate, to do some deep breathing, to go for a walk, to call a friend. You know, I give a lot of examples in the book of different tools that you can use, but it is an absolute time suck. And what we don't know, especially for people who are on antidepressants, is that it actually adds to our anxiety. It adds to our depression, right? We think that it's helping us and it's actually hindering us. And we have just been sold this intoxicating lie that this is the solution because it's fast, it's quick, it's easy, right? And it's like always there. Does it take a little bit more time to try to find a place to get the kids so that you can have 5 minutes alone? Yeah, it is a little bit harder, right? Or you have to put them in the stroller to go for the walk. Like, I get it. I get that it's not always easy, but in that 20 minutes of deep breathing, journaling, oh my gosh. I mean, I talk about the two-way prayer in my book, which is based off of Elizabeth Gilbert's love letters. I know you guys
obsessed.
Yes. So we're doing this in my writing community. We're doing a lot of her journal prompts because it is so transformative. And again, listening to that inner knowing, that's what she's talking about. Her love is your inner knowing, some people call it Holy Spirit, whatever you want to call it. And when we did the month on joy, because so many of us are caught up in hustle and grind, and we don't even know what brings us joy, right? And so I said to the women, I want you to say, dear joy, what would you have me know today? And just get quiet. And the stuff that came up for these women, you know, I haven't danced in years and I want to take a dancing class. I haven't done music and, you know, whatever it is. So one woman in my writing group, she has been doing all the lists. Every morning she meditates, she prays, she does the gratitude list. She's like, Meg, I was like the checkoff girl, right? Like I did everything I was supposed to do, but my soul was just, ugh. And she said, my life coach kept saying to me, what, you know, do something that makes your soul come alive. And she's like, and I just couldn't find it. And then in our writing community, I brought in a woman who taught us neurographica art, because artwork is also part of a journal, very much like what Elizabeth Gilbert says, right? To color and draw in your journal. So neurographica is this whole mindful intention setting, new neuropathways with artwork. It's fascinating. It comes from Russia. So she came in and she taught us this. Well, that woman's light burst open and now she's getting certified to teach neurographic art. And so like, it gives me chills because I was like, this is what this community has done, is turned my light on. And now I want to turn other women's lights on, that inner knowing, right? And like that little girl came alive in her and was like, this is it. This is, she's a teacher and she loves artwork. So it was like the best combination of the two for her. And so, yeah, it's just, It's just been such, I'm so grateful for my book because I couldn't have this writing community without my book. It's like the business card, the entry ticket to the next thing, in my opinion.
Yes. We had Lucinda Halpern on in an earlier episode. She's a literary agent, and she just came out with a book that I helped her with, called Get Signed. And one of the things we talk about in the it's about how to get signed by a literary agent. But one of the things that she talks about a lot in the book, especially towards the end, and this is true for any book, doesn't have to be a traditionally published book, but is like what Ariel, was talking to you about from the very beginning, is that often this is just the beginning. Like the ways that a book will change your life, your livelihood, your business, your work. I think it's one of the things people really can't anticipate, especially if you write a good book and put a lot of effort into getting it out in the world, that even if you have a small audience and you're just talking to your awesome little pocket of the internet, you still you will start getting asked to speak. You will start being asked to be a guest on podcasts. You will be asked to, be a guest in communities. People will do book clubs around your book. Like they will, you'll start being inundated with people wanting to hire you for something. You know what I mean? It's just, it's still, people, I don't like this because I think it's a little gauche and it's reductive, but people will say it's like the fanciest business card that you have. But to
So
some
true.
degree, it's kind of true. Yeah. Like, we'd hope that
I
it's more than that, right? But it's also true, you know?
know when you spend years writing it, you think, oh my gosh, it's just a business card, but it opens up all these doors that you can't even foresee. I mean, I honestly, when I started this, I mean, I didn't even know if I was a writer. I had all the limiting beliefs and all the, ego saying, who are you? You don't have a business. You don't have a platform. You don't have a background in this. Like, who are you? And who are you not, right? Like, what if? And when you speak to your core audience, like you said, like those women who are just like you, and they're like, thank you for writing this book because the other books were keeping me trapped. And I'm not, again, throwing shade at that. We need all the stories so that everybody can see themselves in these books. And I think again, that's why I self-published, because I mean, the thing that was pressing down on me was like, it was like this invitation from the universe. You've got to get this out like right now. And it wouldn't leave me alone. It would not leave me alone to the point where I asked Ariel, should I hire a ghostwriter? I mean, it doesn't even financially make any sense, right? But when you're not somebody big like Desmond Tutu. But yeah, so it just has been such a beautiful, unexpected journey that's been so cathartic and eye-opening, and just has taken me through all of those limiting beliefs of self-worth and said, nope, you can do this. And it's just taught me along the way how to do it. Just like I said, every step scared, but doing it anyway. So
Okay, so you mentioned your membership and talked a little bit about the really cool things you're doing inside of that. Tell us a little bit more about, is it like, do you cap it? How often are you running? Like, is it open enrollment? Like, how does sort of
yeah,
the
so
how does it function?
it's called WRITE, right back to you.
Okay, I love that. That's so good. Really good.
And it's I at first, I have to be honest with you, I thought I wanted this big community, and oh, I had the big, it kind of like when you write a book, it's like, oh, it's gonna be, and actually this small intimate group of 12 of us, which has been so beautiful because we also are on Marco Polo together, which is an app, a video app, back and forth.
Yeah, I love Marco Polo.
I
Yeah,
love
it's
Marco
good.
Polo. Yeah. So we are able to support each other through questions on the topic that month, or 1 month was, like about joy and signs. So people are posting their angel numbers and, their spirit animals and whatever they were seeing, right? So it's like this really beautiful way of being able to connect on a much more intimate level because it's small. So, when I opened up the wait list after I spoke to this 115 women at this conference, 15 immediately signed up, and it's still going to be published in this magazine. So I have a new cohort starting in May. These women have been with me since October. No one's left the community, which I kind of am like, oh, thank God, right? So we've been together. And the one that's going to start in May, so they'll be running simultaneously. And if it is even more so, I might have to open up a third cohort. And this is where I'm starting to, like, down the road, wonder if this will become where I can financially walk away from my current job. I don't know that yet. Like, I'm doing both, which has been a lot of juggle. It's been a lot of in parking lots, making reels during sports, when the kids are doing sporting things, and while I'm waiting on physicians in the waiting room, responding to DMs and things like that. So it's definitely doable, but it's been a lot of work, and I've kind of gone full force for that 1 year. And now I want to refocus more on the writing community. And financially, because it's a monthly membership, that is actually helping me. It's the business that Ariel said, right? It's now I get it. That's the thing.
Yeah, totally. Well, I have a book for you. It's not out till September, but I was the collaborator on Stu McLaren's book. He's like the membership guy. Anyway, he's got a book coming out with Hay House in September. It's all about memberships and how to grow your membership.
Oh, I'm definitely going to get that.
It's great. You should buy it, but
I
also
will.
just call me. I'll tell you everything you need to know about it. No, but you should also buy it. I'm not saying don't buy Stu's book. You should.
I'm like a hard copy. I have to underline, earmark pages.
But yeah, that's awesome. That there is potential, like obviously got to work out, modeling and what you want your life to look like and all that kind of stuff. But that, it sounds like without much marketing of it yet so far, it's really successful. And so like you pour a little gas on that fire, you never know what might.
Just keep following that inner knowing, keep following that passion, that story that you feel like you need to write. Like, don't, those limiting beliefs are going to come in, and it's just once I was able to see that that's just the ego trying to keep you safe and keep you quiet and keep you like protected and not resist it, and know that you came here to tell your story, right? You came here. That's part of why you have this calling and this urge to do it. And whether you write it for your family or you write it for the world, it's something that is just the most cathartic, beautiful journey of self-healing and just taking yourself from, gosh, what I mean, I really, really was like, this may fall flat on its face, to completely being blown away with it selling out the second day on Amazon and being a bestseller. Like, who, I would have never thought that.
I bet Ariel thought that. I was not surprised. And I'm going Yeah, to
exactly.
say, for the record, right here, right now, you heard it on this podcast. Meg, there's another book in your future for sure.
There's one brewing. There's one
Yes,
brewing
I knew
based on
it.
this writing community.
How did we know?
And you will be my first phone call because I'm not writing it without you.
That's so awesome. Okay, so tell us, what's next for you? Maybe not book number two just yet. Your first book just came out like 2 months ago, but what else? You got the community, you're obviously doing speaking, like what else, what's next for you in terms of the book and your message and your career?
I mean, I can see more public speaking events where I'm taking certain topics. Like, I could just teach a workshop on becoming the creator of your life, or just a workshop on intuition. So I have been coming into some communities now. This is another need within the alcohol-free community, There's so many books on how to quit and what that looks like. But once alcohol is out of the way, then the second journey begins, which is the emotional sobriety. And so it's kind of like now it goes back to your question. Okay, alcohol's gone. Now what? Like, how do I deal with all this stress and crap in my life? And that's where I think this community is molding a second book for me. I feel like the intoxicating truths are coming through. And so we'll see where that goes. My husband's like, please don't tell me there's another book. Because it was quite a bit of him having to pick up where I was like hightailing it out for podcasts and things like that. But
Yeah.
I couldn't have done it without the support of my family, honestly. They, and I'm lucky that my kids are at an older age, right? They're teenagers. So, but for anybody that's listening, it's doable. You can do it, but that first year, it's a lot of work. But it's worth every minute of it.
That's amazing. Where can people connect with you and learn more? What are your handles? Where you hang out on the internet?
Yeah, I do Instagram. I know there's a million handles. I can't do them all. So that's the other way that I kind of figured out how to stay sane, I guess, is my Instagram ties to my Facebook. So my Instagram handle is Intoxicating Lies Book, all one word. And that ties to my Facebook page, which is the title of the book, Intoxicating Lies, One Woman's Journey to Freedom from Gray Area Drinking. And then my website is where you can get signed copies of my book. And so, and where you can get on the wait list for Right Back to You. So that's intoxicatinglies.com. So that's where I hang out primarily, other than work and the family.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me. Such a pleasure to be with both of you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.